the Racer's Edge and Major A.W. Chadwick by Louis Buss. I have never begun a novel with more misgiving. If I call it a novel, it is only because I don't know what else to call it. So, Somerset Maugham opens The Racer's Edge, which was to prove his most successful book ever. Quite something, given that he was then the world's most successful living writer. If Maugham's pen had brought him global fame and glittering wealth, it was partly because he had a special genius for reflecting the spirit of the times. The Racer's Edge told the story of a young First World War veteran struggling to fit back into society and make sense of all the horrors he had seen. Sure enough, Maugham published it in 1944, when droves of young men were about to return from the Second World War and face exactly the same problems. Whether this was a happy coincidence or a marketing masterstroke, it worked a charm. Exact figures are hard to come by, but sales of The Racer's Edge went well into the millions. A big budget Hollywood production starring Tyrone Power soon followed and became one of the year's blockbusters, with audiences again far into the millions. Perhaps Maugham's popular touch and his knack for timing were all the book needed to secure its runaway success. But The Racer's Edge had another selling point which set it apart from the other novels to hit the shelves that year. For, as Maugham's ambiguous opening suggests, The Racer's Edge was perhaps not a proper novel at all. Why does the most celebrated novelist in the world open his most successful novel by wondering if he has the right to call it a novel at all? The reason, as Maugham soon reveals, is that this is not actually a work of fiction. I have invented nothing. To save embarrassment to people still living, I have given to the persons who play a part in this story names of my own contriving, and I have in other ways taken pains to make sure that no one should recognize them. So they are all real. In an ordinary novel, we would assume they were mere figments of the author's lively imagination. But this time, we can be sure they are real. Elliot Templeton, the exquisitely snobbish art collector who has his initials monogrammed onto his pajamas. His niece, Isabel, a materialistic young woman faced with a choice between money and love. Gray Maturin, the Wall Street broker she eventually ends up marrying. All of them were real people who, even as those first readers were devouring The Racer's Edge, were still out there, continuing with the stories of their lives where Somerset Maugham had left them. All of which meant that Larry Darrell himself, the extraordinary hero of the novel, was also a real person. That was what made Maugham's insistence that he had invented nothing so wonderful, so exciting, so life-affirming and joyous. For Larry is a sort of modern saint, a shell-shocked young veteran who, after the First World War, tramps around Europe doing odd jobs and searching for the meaning of life, doggedly refusing to give up until he has made sense of it all. In the end, Larry's quest takes him to India, where he spends 2 years studying and meditating under the guidance of a great guru called Sri Ganesha. At the end of those 2 years, Lahari finally receives the spiritual illumination he has been seeking since the war. He returns to the West as an enlightened being. There, he renounces his small private income and resolves to live out the remainder of his life in obscurity and humility, driving a taxi around New York, perhaps, or working in a garage. He is not famous, Mom tells us at the beginning of the book. It may be that when his life at last comes to an end, he will leave no more trace of his sojourn on this earth than a stone thrown into a river leaves on the surface of the water. Yet, it may be that the way of life he has chosen for himself may have an ever-growing influence over his fellow men, so that long after his death, perhaps, it may be realized that there lived in this age a very remarkable creature. How tantalizing, how intriguing and frustrating for those first readers of The Race's Edge. Imagine reading Mom's words on the New York subway one morning in 1945, then lowering the book and looking at your fellow passengers, wondering if one of them might be the elusive Larry Darrell himself. No wonder Mom received sacks of fan mail for Larry, along with requests for his picture and his autograph. No wonder various literary detectives set off on the hunt for the real Larry Darrell, a fruitless and inconclusive quest which has continued in some form or another down to the present day. The first candidate for the real Larry was the famous English novelist Christopher Isherwood. What made him seem a likely suspect at the time was that he was a friend of Mom's who was interested in Hinduism and even had a guru of his own. The historian Gerald Herd was suggested as a possible Larry for similar reasons. Then, many years after the appearance of The Race's Edge, Mom published an article entitled The Saint. This gave an account of his 1938 visit to Sri Ramanashramam and recorded his impressions of Ramana Maharishi. His descriptions of Ramana corresponded exactly and sometimes word for word with the descriptions of Sri Ganesha, Larry's guru, in The Race's Edge. So, from now on, it was quite obvious that the great saint with whom the real Larry had lived and meditated for 2 years had been none other than Sri Ramana Maharishi. This naturally tended to undermine Isherwood and Herd as potential candidates, since neither of them had ever met Ramana, let alone spent 2 years as the only white resident of his ashram. Ideally, the real Larry would now need to be someone who was a devotee of the Maharishi and who had also known Somerset Maugham. The best possibility for a while seemed to be a devotee called Guy Haig. Like Larry, Haig was an American. Like Larry, he had worked in the mines, and like him, he had also lived in the ashram for an extended period. The only drawback was that, as it eventually turned out, Haig had never actually met Somerset Maugham. It seems that when the great writer visited the ashram, Haig had not arrived there himself, but was still on the boat from Manila. And if Maugham never met Haig, it was rather hard to see how he could have based a character on him. There is one last candidate, perhaps the most surprising and implausible of them all, and that is Paul Brunton. It seems that Brunton once told his son that he had met Mom at a party on the eve of the novelist's departure for India, Brunton further claimed that he was the one who had recommended Mom should visit the Maharishi. However, Brunton was never one to let the facts get in the way of a good story, and there is no independent evidence to back him up. And even if he and Mom did meet as claimed, it would still hardly prove that Brunton then became the hero of Mom's most successful novel ever. So perhaps in the end, there was no hero after all. Perhaps the search for the real Larry is so frustrating and baffling precisely because there was no real Larry to begin with. Perhaps despite his own protestations to the contrary, Mom just made the whole thing up. Surely, if there was a candidate who ticked all the boxes, we would have found him by now. We need someone who knew both Somerset Maugham and Ramana Maharishi. Ideally, he should have lived at Sri Ramana Ashramam for 2 years, as Larry did before returning to the West. What else do we know about Larry that might allow us to identify his real counterpart? Larry was twice wounded during the war. Though he managed to carry on fighting, he had to rest on his return home, and it is strongly implied that he was suffering from shell shock. To add to the trauma of it all, Larry's best friend was killed during the conflict. Once he has got himself back together, instead of resuming his place in society and settling down to a suitable career, our shell-shocked young man starts drifting around as a sort of tramp, wandering from one menial job to the next as he reads philosophy and searches for the meaning of life. This he is able to do because he is lucky enough to have a small private income. Unfortunately, Larry's refusal to settle down to a career makes it difficult for him to settle down with a wife. Although he is engaged to Isabel Bradley at the beginning of the book, Larry's refusal to get a proper job means that this can't last. Once the engagement has fallen through, Larry lifts from girlfriend to girlfriend as casually as he drifts from job to job, always moving on, never settling down. It should by now be clear what a remarkable and unconventional man Larry is, and this makes the search for his real counterpart all the more hopeless. For surely, such an unusual person would leap straight out at us. Perhaps it is hardly surprising that everyone today has given up the search. Either Larry Darrell was a pure figment of the author's imagination, or he was a sort of composite character having bits of Christopher Isherwood mixed in with bits of Gerald Hurd, perhaps even with a dash of Paul Brunton here and there to add a touch of color. Yet, admitting that Larry was a pure fiction all along is sad and strange. Sad because even after all these years, it would be so much more wonderful and romantic to believe that Larry had been a real person, quietly spreading a benign influence on the lives of those around him, a living beacon of sanctity and hope. And strange because Mom was famous for putting real people in his books. Not being a particularly imaginative writer, he tended just to lift his characters straight from real life. So how did he suddenly manage to invent a character as extraordinary as Larry? And having invented him, why begin the razor's edge by assuring us so explicitly that he is real? This leads us on to another crucial piece of evidence, as one might expect of a writer who based his characters on real people, Mom, for many years, kept a notebook or journal. Here, he would record his impressions of the people he met and the places he visited so that he could later use them in his fictional works. By the end of his life, Mom had filled up many volumes with these notes. Sadly, the originals were destroyed before his death, but he did produce a much redacted version for publication. Surely, if Larry was based on a real person, that person would make some sort of appearance in the notebook Mom used as the basis for his novels. There would surely be an account of his meeting with the real Larry and of the impression he had made, and how fascinating that would be. After the publication of The Race's Edge, Mom gave an interview in which he let slip another valuable clue. The theme of the veteran who drops out of society on his return from war was one that had long interested him. Indeed, the pattern of The Race's Edge had been laid out years before in a lost play called The Road Uphill, and now Mom revealed that it was something that had happened on his trip to India in 1938 that had inspired him to revisit this old theme. But why should a visit to India, of all places, have brought shell-shocked veterans back into Mom's head? Surely, it could only be because he had met the model for Larry Darrell there and come away with the idea for The Race's Edge already germinating in his mind. That is an easy way to put all this to the test. Not only has Mom left us with a shortened version of his notebooks, but he has conveniently divided them up by country. All we have to do, therefore, is to turn to the section that describes his visit to India and see if he records meeting anybody there who might be a possible candidate for the real Larry. And who is the very first person we encounter when we do this? Who is the very first person Mom describes in the Indian section of his notebook? A person, moreover, to whom he devotes more space than to anyone else he met in the country, including Ramana Maharishi himself. It is somebody referred to only by the enigmatic code name of Major C. The fact that we have followed Mom to India seeking some connection with the First World War and immediately run smack into a Major is surely no coincidence. So, who was this Major C, and might he perhaps have borne any resemblance to the elusive Mr. Darrell? Major C was, of course, none other than our own Major Alan Wentworth Chadwick, a well-known figure in the ashram and Ramana Maharishi's most prominent Western devotee. Even from the evidence presented so far, it should be obvious that Chadwick is a prime candidate for the real Larry. Unlike any of the others in the frame, he possesses the unique qualification of having been a devotee of Ramana Maharishi, who actually met Somerset Maugham. For it was none other than Major C who welcomed Maugham to the ashram in 1938. Unlike Isherwood and Hurd, Chadwick had actually fought in the First World War and thus shared in the great formative trauma of Larry's life. And when Mom met him, Chadwick had been living in Sri Ramanashramam for 2 years, the exact period of time Larry was to spend there. But all that is just the beginning. In 2011, I started searching a book about Chadwick, and I soon uncovered previously unknown facts which convinced me that Major C was indeed the real Larry Darrell. To be continued.